Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What if our ideas were considered private property? In most parts of the world, you can patent inventions, but not the thoughts that go into them. But my guest today believes that placing a value on ideas and giving those who have them first the right to a share of the money they earn could distribute wealth to a much wider section of every population and help shrink the wealth gap that separates the richest among us from the middle and working classes. Shraga Biran is an author, attorney, and entrepreneur. His new book is called Opportunism: How to Change the World One Idea at a Time. Shraga, welcome to Think.
Thank you for inviting me.
Your idea is that a lot of people can benefit from a system that distributes what is now undistributed wealth. What does that mean?
That means, first of all, that I don't want to touch the private property system of the people that own their properties. Let them have it. By the way, it's reduced every year because the new wealth is becoming larger and larger, and the old wealth is diminished. In the last 30 years, about 70% of the wealth that has been in 30 years ago do not exist anymore. It, in proportion, it has been diminished. The new wealth is taking over. You know, the new wealth is the intangible wealth of the world, the spiritual wealth. I mean, the ideas, the idea creating, the idea producing wealth is the new wealth of the world. According to a very important study of the United Nations, about 85% of the wealth of the nations today, and it's a very surprising number, is intangible. 85% of the wealth of the nation. Have a look on such corporations like Microsoft, Google, and all the others that you know much better than me. What is all about them? They have systems, they have ideas, they have innovation. They are innovative. They are creating the new wealth, and this new wealth is creating every day. Now, have a look what's happening in the United States. I'm talking about the last two news of the last 2 days. Today in the New York Times, 750,000 on the debate about the reform of the patent law in the United States, mm-hmm. 750,000 applications are online, and you have to wait 3 years to get a patent on your 3 years today. Is eternity. It disappears.
So
what's happening here in the United States, that the old wealth is trying to take over the new wealth. That is the problem. Let the new wealth, the new social strata that is creating the new wealth, the new way of distributing the wealth, the new way of accumulating the wealth, and especially the new way of creating it out of ideas, let them have a share of this new wealth. And how can it be done? Only by structural reforms of the whole system. Now, take into account, the reform is debated in the United States for about 2, 3, 4 years, okay? And the debate is not touching the major problem, the structural problem of the system of patents. And the structural problem is that you do not acknowledge the wealth of the ideas. You are acknowledging only the structures which are expressing them.
So
which is absurd, mm-hmm. which is absolutely absurd. It's like you would acknowledge the battle and not the wine as the product. Mm-hmm. You know, that is something wild. It was you know, the whole story of patents is coming from 1700 Act of N, 311 years before. How can you, you know, to create the same, to talk about the same system of property rights to today as they've been in an intangible world, as you've been able to do it in 300 years ago when innovations have been 2, 5, 10 a year, when today everything is innovation and creation of innovation. That is the whole story of our time. So it's absurd. And nobody's talking about that in the United States. Why is that so? It has a political reason. And the political reason is that if you are living ideas without acknowledging them as assets, without granting them property rights, you are just throwing them out to the market, and the huge pharmaceutical that are making billions, and the huge corporations are taking over this, basically this wealth, because there are two rules. Ideas are not assets. And second, whoever is working as an employee at an employer is not getting whatever he is inventing in the framework of his work belongs to the employer. It doesn't make sense anymore because you are taking over the time of your worker, of your employee, but you don't take out, you don't acquire his creative ability, his mind, because the mind, today the wealth is coming from your mind. The new minds are the minds.
Well, let's talk about that because, right, when you are an intellectual worker, very often you sign something that says anything I come up with during the time that I'm in the employ of this corporation belongs to them. And the corporation would argue, well, that's because we have given you training, we've given you resources, we've given you the things that sort of get your mind working this way.
So let's share.
Why doesn't that? So let's share. So how does that – talk about how that would work.
It would work just by sharing the fruits. Mm-hmm. By the way, some courts have acknowledged that you have to share. Because sometimes, you know, a great idea is coming up that's creating billions of dollars. There's a great example in Japan. And the guy went to court and said, look, 200 million, 200 billion, whatever is the sum. But, you know, it's reproducing itself like hell. So why not to share with me? In the Japanese court about 10, 20 years ago, allotted this guy some share of this fruits of his innovation. It has to be acknowledged because today, you know, before the money part, the capital part, the tangible part in the invention was the substantial part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the thinking was a part of a team working together and, you know, making some kind of a progress once a decade, once, you know, it was something exceptional because the factory has been the money-producing element, the producing line. The work, the labor, the productivity in the framework of the Fordian system. Today it's not anymore. Today the guy that is coming up in the morning is a young opportunist and he is trained to think in a positive manner. And he's coming up and saying, my God, I want to innovate, I want to create, I want to produce my opportunity. Because until now everybody was thinking that opportunities are a result of a creation of God, coming directly from God, or they're coming directly from some kind of a chance, from luck. It's fatal. It's prescribed by fate. It's fatalistic. You can't create your own opportunity. But we know today, and that is my basic message in my book, we are living in an opportunistic era. It's a new era. In this era, when you can, you know, reach connectivity, information, knowledge, everything which, you know, online, immediately, and I don't have to waste your time about how connectivity is working today. So today is the great day of opportunism, of creating opportunity, not a wait for opportunities. So in this world that you can create opportunity, which is innovation. It's impregnation of a situation with something new. That is the story. It's impregnation. It's some very, very libidosic element. This story of opportunity, of creating opportunities.
You have a story in the book about Diesel, the guy who invented the diesel engine, and where he got the inspiration for that. That's an interesting, I think, example of how this might work if the world worked in a very different way. Can you talk about that?
I mean, it's example. But I don't want to waste my time on examples. I would like to, with your kind permission, to try to transfer my message about what has to be done.
Continue telling me your message then.
My message is that if you would acknowledge that ideas are assets and they have to be recognized like private property, then ideas, I'm not talking about ideas that are philosophical ideas, political ideas, literature ideas, ideas concerning art, media, whatever. I'm speaking about ideas that are wealth-pregnant ideas, that are wealth-bearing ideas, that today you have an idea you have that is becoming a concept, that afterwards is becoming, you know, information, that after it's becoming a theory, and after it can be tasted, and thereafter it's becoming a final expression of this idea and it's becoming a patent. But during this whole period of time, of this 9 months of pregnancy of idea and becoming, you know, this beautiful born child of the century, that time, why should it be not recognized as time that belongs to you?
So how specific does the idea have to be in order for someone, we'll talk in a minute about your idea bank.
Yes.
How specific does the idea have to be for someone to profit from it?
It has to be formulated. It has to be specific. Mm-hmm. You have to acknowledge that it has something to do with innovation, that you are the author of it. You are the producer of it. You are the first to think about it. You have done it. You have created it. You have formulated it. But it's not yet a patent. It's not yet applicable. On the other hand, you have to understand that today, in the world of abstract, the idea itself is wealth, is property. The idea itself, not its expression, because the expression, we have reached, you know, this wonderful, dreamy world of all the big philosophers, almost reaching the stage of God, because what God has done in these 7 days of creation, by his statements, he has created, you know, day and night and heaven and hell and everything together. So when you are speaking about the abstract part of the creation, of the innovation, it's some kind of a God-made situation where the statement itself is the property. So not to acknowledge, and they're always quoting the great statement of Jefferson. But the great statement of Jefferson that ideas have to be free was a call for democracy and freedom of expression, especially in politics, in economics, in philosophy, everything that has been connected with the Enlightened era of the great American Revolution. But it did not mean not to grant property rights to ideas that are bringing wealth and not to create a shared economy. It's against the basic principles of Jefferson, because Jefferson was the man or his followers that have created the whole system of homesteads that was granting property rights to the people that are sweating and putting their sweat equity into the land. What I'm saying today is that instead of speaking about sweat equity, speak about the mind equity. Your mind is the creator of the new equity, of the new capital, of the new wealth. So not to speak today in the framework of the reformation of the patent law about granting ideas as, you know, property rights is something anti-capitalistic in the worst manner, because they know that the problem exists, but nobody is talking about it. So here from Dallas, you know, the town of entrepreneurial attitudes, I'm calling, changes, think about it. And in your program, think about it in a new way. Don't follow this dogmatic manner that ideas are not anymore. Because it's like taking, you know, it's unlawful enrichment on the account of this huge amount of young people that are creating the new wealth. It's unlawful enrichment. That is my message. It's basically a message of fairness and justice and a call for real equality of opportunity.
Let's take a quick break. We'll talk more about this in a couple of minutes. My guest this hour is attorney, author, and entrepreneur Shraga Vidhan. His new book is called Opportunism: How to Change the World One Idea at a Time. If you want to join our conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education, offering an information session March 15th for its CFP certificate program in Dallas, starting in April. You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is attorney, author, and entrepreneur Shraga Bidan. His new book is called Opportunism, How to Change the World One Idea at a Time. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send an email to think@kera.org, or you can call us at 1-800-933-5372. Shraga, I want to ask about this, and I know you're not crazy about examples, but I'm going to give you one because it helps me to understand.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a technology like an iPod, okay?
Okay.
There are several great ideas. Did millions of them sell because of the way it worked, because of the way it looked, because of the fact that you could get it in 10 different colors? There are multiple designers having good ideas who worked on that project. Should all of them in this system get a larger share of the profits than another employee who's filing papers or something in the same company?
You know, I would like to say the following. I'm not for the old kind of equality. I don't believe in it. I believe in individualism. I believe in entrepreneurship. I believe in being rewarded for your effort. I don't believe in parasitic elements. Therefore, I believe in democracy. And the great alternative of our century is how to bring more equality, a new kind of equality. Something new that shall create something which is bringing more fairness to and more reward or more motivation to the creative class, mm-hmm. to all these people that are creating this wealth. Therefore, what I'm saying is not in a dogmatic manner, not by sharing by numbers,
right.
Sharing by creativity. If I have an idea and my idea has finally brought up some wealth, I'm entitled to a share of it. And always the question is how to keep it open from one side and still be rewarded for my creation.
Is this a disincentive to people who invest capital in order to bring these ideas to fruition because they'll earn a smaller share of the profit than they did before?
Yes, I fully agree that if you are investing your capital that have been made by you, it's your share has to be kept, of course. But the idea is the new equity is sometimes much more than the value or the worth or the share of capital. I mean, it has to be worked out in a very specific manner. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's idea. I'm talking about ideology. I'm talking in the framework not of specifics that
right.
how to divide this great story of iPhone and iPod, iPad, and all this new world that you have a feeling that without it you can't live.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's becoming a part of your body. So it's a great invention. It's a great creation. It's something out of this world. Who would believe that you can, combine all this together? It's great stuff. But let's all the people that have been part of this great creation have their share, smaller share, bigger share, and the capital has also to be rewarded. But no, those people that have invented it, let them take their share too, because they are not taking their share. That is the problem.
Let me have you put your headphones on because lots of people want to call in and talk to you about this. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. Let's go first on the phones to Sarah in Dallas. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I just wanted to share a story. My husband is a scientist, and he was working on a project for something else and accidentally discovered something that was a potential big use for the consumer products companies. And the other scientists that he was working with in cooperation, in partnership, only contributed like 5%, and my husband contributed like 95%. Well, the other company wanted to claim it because they would benefit a lot from it. They had more of a use for it than my husband's company. So they fought it out. They tried to say that they it was their idea, but they got pretty close to going to court over it to fight it out. And my husband's company won out in the settlement because they could prove with lab notebooks, with other types of proof that they actually had come up with. My husband had come up with the idea. So they realized that they were going to lose in court. And so they went ahead and bought it, paid off my husband's company, and they made several million dollars for that. And
let me stop you there. I think we've got the basics of your story and the idea that your husband had this great idea. Do you want to comment on that, Shraga?
Yes, of course. That is exactly our story, because that is the story of a man that is fighting two elements that prevail today and have to be transformed. One, that normally in employment contracts, you give up your rights for your ideas that have been invented during the period of time of your work with that employer. And the second, in the patent law, it's specifically stated all over the world, almost, that ideas are not assets, are not eligible to be registered as patents. These two ideas have been the enemy of your husband. And they have to be transformed, because that such a reform, such a transformation of the structure of intellectual property would create a large, huge benefit for society and for innovation. At the same time, it should reward the people that are creating these new wealth. That is exactly the story of my message to you and to America today, that is debating this reform of the patent law.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We'll go next on the phones to Aram in Grapevine. Hi, Aram.
Hi. I haven't read your guest book, so I might be slightly off. With that said, I 180 degrees differ with your guest. I think we have too much regulations on patent and restrictions. There is a bill right now before the Congress that they are trying to go back retroactively, take some of the material that's already public domain and subject them to patent. On the ideas, we have copyright notions that can secure some of those ideas. And in the bigger picture, when are we going to stop? The next thing that, you know, the escalation of the idea of your guest would be that if I get inspired by doing something that gives me that idea, then next we have to patent or, you know, somehow secure that. Let's say I look at the moon and I get inspired, or I look at the wave of the oceans and I figure out that's a harmonic wave, then the act of looking would need to be regulated. So with respect for your guest, I think we have enough regulations, especially affecting the third world in food and such, and perhaps the companies that they, you know, abuse their employees should be forced to give money to their employees or whatnot, but ideas, I think we should leave them as public domain.
Well, Aram, I appreciate your call. I want to get a response for you.
Yes, that is exactly the opposite, very well stated, of what I am saying. If you would say that my table belongs to you because it somehow has been, you know, a part of a timber that has been belonged to the forest of everybody, you would say it's a joke. Because, you know, the table is tangible and you have a feeling it's yours, it's in your hand, it's yours. When we are speaking about ideas, you are prejudiced that ideas have to be free. They are not a table, they are just ideas. But today ideas are the great tables of the world. So not to grant them property rights. I'm not speaking about regulations and more regulations, just speaking. If you want an improved world, that a little bit of fairness and more equality, a new kind of equality that should fit in the 21st century, try to think about the possibility to consider that ideas are much more important than tables.
Do you think, Shraga, that this would also change the way we educate our children in the sense that it would cause us to have much more of an incentive to try to help them develop their creative skills? And
No question of it. I'm also a teacher, and I always, you know, tried to think about the new generation. Because if a child is coming up and thinking in a positive manner that he can create, that he can become, you know, because people normally, you know, they want to be richer, they want to develop the abilities to move, to be apart, to have leisure time, to think, to enjoy. But at the same time, they want a little bit of glory too, acknowledgement, which is something that is coming from society. And I'm just repeating the great words of Machiavelli that is considered such a brutal, you know, thinker, but he was a very humanistic man. And he was also thinking about opportunities, a new way, how to create, how to adopt, you know, ideas to situations. And this adaptivity, this kind of ability to create your opportunity in the field that you feel well, when you are dreaming at the moon or with your beloved, then the dreams are creating, you know, this motivation to go ahead, to create something new. And this, you know, it's a combination of intuition, of a lot of sentiment, a lot of devotion, and a lot of you know, of creativity, which is a combination of all that. It's a mental situation. It's not only a rational situation. And this combination between the rational and mental is creating this creative momentum, this opportunistic moment of our life. And that has to be, you know, when a child is coming up and he is listening to these stories, he's becoming more and more aware that he can create his own world. His individual, not as a part of a crowd, but in his liberated self, in his individualistic self. And that is the great message to the kids, to the educators. Let them transmit this message to them.
Let's go back to the phones now. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Next on the line, we have Mohammed in Irving. Hi, Mohammed.
Yes, hello. How are you? Thank you for having my call.
Sure.
I just had two questions. I basically agree with the argument that your guest is making. It's an issue of justice. But I would ask, how would... or what would the guest's basic, I guess, advice for regulating or institutionalizing this practice? Because I would see how a lot of problems would arise, where the idea would come from, or different claims to it. And the second question: would you support this also applying to universities, since many universities essentially run like businesses, and you have the students that are in those universities coming with you know, new ideas that translate into a lot of money also. So would you support that also? Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Yes, of course. I mean, especially to the universities, because they are the cradle of creating the great amount of new ideas in medicine, in science, in every field, also in arts. Everybody that is moving today in the world is basically created. And America has acknowledged that. You know, in 1980, you have passed a law which is called the Bayh-Dole Act 1980 that has transferred all the patents that have been, you know, accumulated by the state of America during until that time, funded by American state institutions, to the universities, so they should make, you know, reward the creators of these patents. They should transfer the technical transfer to the industries, and at the same time to enrich the universities. And that was this 1980 law. Bayh-Dole Act is one of the great achievements of the transfer of technologies in the United States. I'm not sure that it's so known, but it was celebrated about 5 years ago or 10 years ago. It's a great story of our times. What I'm saying, that is not enough. It's a great idea. What has to be done? Of course, there are problems, but there's an American solution to every problem.
We like to think so.
Yes. No, I'm encouraging you to think in a positive way. So if there is a positive way to... Of course, everything is problematic. There's no direct, you know, through-cut solutions to such complicated... It's a global situation. Have a look what's happening in Egypt. I mean, these new kids that are running in the street and calling for democracy. I mean, I'm thinking about them. Because they are, you know, they are the American Revolution, the French Revolution. This is the enlightened. This is the opportunistic moment of our decade. It's a great story, and what they are calling for and sacrificing themselves for freedom, democracy. Okay, so what has to be done? I am calling for something very special, because a dry democracy may lead to fundamentalism, and fundamentalism leads to terror. Poverty leads to fundamentalism. Poverty leads to terror. So if you will not justify, you will not put a little bit of a kind of a Marshall Plan, a 21st century Marshall Plan toward Egypt, you should just pay off a debt of America, of Western Europe, of all our enlightened that have kept Egypt, you know, by assisting them through U.S. aid, by assisting create this army, the Egyptian army, and assisting them through IMF and the World Bank to transfer the Washington consensus, as it has been called, to Egypt. That meant reducing taxes, liberalizing the monetary system, and it's familiar to you, reducing the welfare state elements of, you know, subsidizing the pita and the hummus and the daily bread, and, you know, and privatizing the industries that have been kept in the hands of the state, and so on. What that resulted is in famine, in poverty. And if you should compare China, 1980, and Egypt, 1980, in China we had about 55% of poverty below $2 a day. Today, after 30 years, it disappeared in China. And in Egypt, the same numbers have grown by many times. And you have this, you know, 75% poor people in the villages, 11 million people living in the cemeteries. So that is a kind of opportunistic moment that if you want, I'm very pessimistic that it shall happen, because people do not dare. To be opportunistic, it means to dare, to have enough courage to move ahead at the moment when you are needed, not to think about it and write histories why it failed, because the history, you know, is a graveyard of opportunities lost.
Shagar Biran is my guest. He's an attorney, author, and entrepreneur. His new book is called Opportunism, How to Change the World One Idea at a Time. We'll take more of your calls to 1-800-933-5372 after the break. You can also send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education, offering an information session March 15th for its CFP certificate program in Dallas, starting in April. You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is attorney, author, and entrepreneur Shraga Biran. His new book is called Opportunism, How to Change the World One Idea at a Time. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. That's where we find Scott in Dallas. Hello, Scott.
Hi. Fascinating hour, this Think. I just really want to thank you for the episode. I'm interested in looking at the people that are very good at creating ideas and how different they may be than the people very good at managing ideas.
What do you think, Shraga?
It's a great combination. You need them both. I mean, you can be innovative in management, not less than in medicine, in science, and in the computer sciences. You mean the opportunistic world is working all 24 hours a day, I mean, without a stop. It's working, it's expecting. You have sometimes a feeling that the future is taking over the present. You know, I don't believe in the past. I don't believe in experience, not anymore today. Maybe 50 years ago it was correct. Because today, all the elements of the future are becoming present. You know, and the present is, you know, throwing out into the garbage of history the existing, and everything which is already existing is old. And the new is overtaking, you know, the future is all the time victoring, you know, the present. And it's pushing, it's making it near, so you have a feeling that you are living in the future, not in the present. And that story of management, of managing this situation, has to be done by people that are quick, that are intuitive, that are aggressive, that want it. They're ambitious. They're entrepreneurs. They want to create. It's their love. It's their passion. It's their fulfillment. It's their claim to fame, to glory, to reward. But all that has to be done in a structure when people have the basic economic living situation, because no civilization without leisure. You need leisure. You need knowledge. You need time. You need to think. You know, you are called think. That's a great name. Because, you know, to think, it means to concentrate, not to just pass by and to read and to absorb all the time, you know, ideas of others. Just to create, it means to be ambitious, to create from yourself, from your own inter-elements to create something new. That is the great story.
I want to say, having listened to you through this hour, so much of what you're saying sounds more like something that you would hear from someone who is 20 or 30 than someone who is, if you don't mind my saying, you're 80. Is that correct?
Not yet.
Oh, sorry.
Yet.
Forgive me. But close enough. You're in your 70s. Okay.
Okay.
Do you think that part of it, to the extent that there's resistance to this idea, is it because a lot of the people who control capital and political power are older and think more about the importance of the past as opposed to what's taking place now and in the future?
No, I don't think
so. You don't think so?
No, it's political economy. It's politics. It's keeping the urge of people to continue more of the same. That is the problem. And the fact that more and more people that are creating the new wealth do not come up and say we are entitled to get our share, and not electing through a democratic process people that are ready to go ahead with reforms. Have a look. We have been all weeping. I mean, many people all around the world believe that the election of Obama is something of a century, turn of a century. It's something, you know, a sunshine that is coming from heaven. We've been excited. I mean, the whole world has been excited about it because he declared change. And I was absolutely sure that next day in the morning, we shall see change.
And you haven't seen it.
No, I've not seen it, but I still expect, because if Obama shall fail, it should be a failure of a turn of the century, because the whole world expected it. You know, you are living in a world of 7.5 billion people that can capable to get out from their poverty. Today, to save the problems of poverty is not a moral problem only. It's a problem, economic, political problem. Because otherwise, if you believe that you should be able to live here in the great, beautiful America and enjoy your riches and your abilities and your opportunities without finding a way to revive the whole world, forget it. It shall be a story of spoiled milk. You have to change your attitude, and the call for change has to be implemented by content. I have a look on the following situation. You have lost the Vietnam War, you have lost the Iraqi War, you have lost the Afghanistan War, with so much sacrifice, God forbid, with so much blood and so on. But the big war that you know, changed the whole situation of the world and made the whole world more democratic, you know, the collapse of the Berlin Wall and the collapse of the Soviet Union and the change in China, have been your work, but not through rifles, but through an example of a country of opportunity, of abilities, of riches, of ability to live. So this call for a new real opportunity, what I'm calling, is to create the real opportunity, not the shallow, you know, this vacant call of opportunity, which is not backed by economic abilities. And the economic abilities is something that has to be done in the framework of what I'm calling social privatization, by granting in a democratic manner rights to the people that are creating their wealth. Let them have it. It's a problem, but it can be solved in structural reforms that maybe this administration will be able to do it.
Let's go back to the phones now. The number is 1-800-933-5372. This time we'll speak with Charles in Fort Worth. Hi, Charles.
Yeah. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
All right. I have a question for Mr. Bidan concerning this idea that the idea by itself is not wealth, which I agree with, and his proposal that idea itself should be classified as wealth. The question that I have is the way that ideas are now patented or copyrighted are usually based on reducing that idea from the thoughtful form, which is an abstract, to some kind of practical form to where someone can follow it and create what that idea was suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were to depart from that and go to a more lower standard so that people can have that idea patented or copyrighted, which will then accrue to them as wealth, what standard is Mr. Bidan suggesting? Should it be based on just thought itself? And if it is thought by itself, how is that represented into a form that could then be patented? And if it is thought plus some kind of schematic or diagrams, I want him to give us some kind of
Let's get an answer for you. I think what you mean.
You have to diversify the registration of rights into lower degree of rights, into a medium kind of registration of rights, and to finally to the great story of patents or copyrights. But I'm saying at the beginning you have an idea, not just idea, but idea that can be formulated and proven that it's potentially going to create wealth. Such idea is already something. I mean, it has value because you're starting with it. Because then it's becoming, a kind of information, a kind of knowledge, a kind of a system, a kind of anything which is climbing on the ladder to this great moment of becoming a patent. So why not to register these ideas at the beginning if they are well formulated, and keep this registrar that shall give you, let's say, 10% or 15% if you should not develop it. But it shall be open to the public. By your basic right of this 10, 15, 20 or whatever percent, you will be entitled, according to the degree of the development of your idea, will create a situation that you will be motivated to register it, to open it to the humankind, to the whole creative classes all over the world. At the same time, you know that you shall not have to fight in the courts for your basic idea being created by you. It's just, it's fair, it's creative, it's going to assist the world to more ideas, because a lot of people are keeping their ideas with themselves, being afraid that tomorrow it should be taken up by others. And we've confronted this story so many times. And still, be open and still be rewarded. So it's good for society, it's good for the creative class, it's good for making more justice and, a little bit more equality, this new kind of equality for more people in this world.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We'll go next on the line to Scott in Dallas. Hi, Scott.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Listening to the conversation since I got on the phone has been very interesting. I'm an industrial designer, and I have one patent. I have another one that's applied for, and a number of other things going with his last part of his discussion that have been under my hat because of the problems of marketing things and properly protecting them. Anyway, and this is very interesting because, for instance, I believe your first caller, his name was Ron, I think, he mentioned something that I hear very often about that we should actually be removing patent rights, essentially, and idea rights, which I do not understand at all, because actually, the only way you protect a patent now is with an 800-pound gorilla called a patent attorney. And there is actually no protection for a patent in the patent itself. So the question with the rights of, for instance, our thought as transmuted would be that we're not actually for small individuals and small companies able to protect patent rights as it is. And the conservative idea is to reduce those further. So how do we go the other direction?
What do you think, Shraga?
You see, if you, I would tell you about 70 years ago that the biggest part of the riches will be created not by the big factories of the world, you would say it's impossible. Because at that time, agriculture was about 10-15% of the employed people. The industrial world was about 50%, 45%, whatever. And the rest was services. The intellectual property creators have been a very, very small part of the whole economy. So at that time, if I would try to transform such a situation, it would be a joke. It was not the opportunity. It wasn't the time. It wasn't the timing. Today, you are living in another world. You are living in a world where 85% of the wealth of the nations are intangible, are ideas. Not to acknowledge ideas as a wealth-creating element in this 85% intangible world is just a joke. Everybody, it's some kind of a old-fashioned, you know, outlived, you know, I don't want to offend anybody, of people that do not want, because of their political economic interests, that they want to prevail. It's a story that the old riches want to take over the new, which belongs to 60-70% of the population. Today, about 35-40% of America, according to the counting of the Census Bureau of America, are the creating class. Imagine 35%. Industry is about 10-12%. Agriculture is about 1%. And much more of that is also in the other fields too. So not to acknowledge it is just to spit into the face of the new generation, which is mainly doing that job. Let's pick up the truth. It's just not to allow this new generation to come up and take the world, the new world, to the new social strata, and let them climb on the social ladder in a democratic manner. That is the story. I believe that message is a message of social political value, and it can create the new America. You know, because you are already the new America has become a little bit old. If you want to renew America, you have to become, you know, you have to express the interests of the new social strata in a very democratic manner.
My guest this hour has been author, attorney, and entrepreneur Shraga Biran. His new book is called Opportunism, How to Change the World One Idea at a Time. Shraga, thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.